Lovely tunes on U105. Good morning to you. 0289033105. Now, apparently 9 in every 10 people in a survey, this survey was carried out recently, 9 in every 10 people who were actually surveyed recognise the benefits of having an equal society in Northern Ireland. Okay, think about that, an equal society. But only 1 in 5 think that public figures show leadership on this particular issue. To explain more, I've Dr. Michael Wardlow, Chief Commissioner of the Equality Commission for Northern Ireland. Dr. Michael Wardlow, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Frank.
With regards to what you were setting out to achieve, why were you doing the survey?
Okay. I'm in my 8th year here, and during that time, we've commissioned a series of public attitude surveys ourselves. This one was actually a question in an Ipsos Mori poll, so it was done independently from us. The sample is representative of the whole of Northern Ireland, so therefore we can draw some conclusions from what was there. And it's a bit in your sports parlance, a bit like a game of two halves. The positive findings in this report, I mean, you ask why, it's really to find out what people's view of equality is, because it seems that, you know, it's dominating the political landscape, it's dominating some of our social politics, and the words being used and bandied around. And we wanted to sort of track over a period of time people's views on equality, and that's what this does. So the headline for me was that 75% of people say they already believe that Northern Ireland is a welcoming place. Now, that's obviously subjective, and that's brilliant. Now, given that, we sort of asked them, well, do you think equality is important? And consistently over our attitude surveys, in fact, this is higher, 90% almost of people said there are benefits of having an equal society. And in fact, almost the same number said they personally care deeply about making it a fairer place. And that for us was extremely important. And when you think of the amount of time that we've had legislation in the 1970s, you know, about women in employment and Protestant Catholics, when we then asked about workplaces, 2/3 of people said, yep, workers generally are treated with dignity and respect. And only 12% of people said, you know, in their workplace, they actually noticed a lack of dignity or respect. So for us saying, measuring the sort of state of the nation, if you like, people were saying, in the main, things in some areas are still good. But 90% said law is still necessary. And 3/4 actually said that the equality law should be tightened, should be actually increased. And when we said, well, you know, what areas do you think particularly? Not surprisingly, the bulk of people, 4 out of 5, said more needs to be done to try to promote equality of opportunity, and about the same number, more to be done to promote good relations. So if you like, that was the high-level good stuff. Do you want me to go into maybe some of the more negative stuff?
Well, I want you to explain how 1 in 5 think that public figures show really aren't showing leadership in relation to this.
Absolutely. So we were asking, if you like, a number of detailed questions around, let's say, the landscape. And so therefore, people believe it's important. People want stronger laws. People have witnessed the benefits of strong laws in the workplace and others. And in fact, people said public spaces are mostly accessible. But they then said there's a number of things that they would like something better done about. And those are in areas that you would expect. You know, you're talking about travellers and Romas in school, for example, or newcomer children. 60% of people say that bullying at schools are based on children's personal characteristics. We then broadened this out a bit beyond the sort of particular and said, well, actually, do you know what groups are protected? And actually about 1/3 said they didn't. We then asked, well, do you know where the equality legislation applies? And again, about 1/3 said they didn't. So that raises a question for us about there's an awareness gap in here. So the question is, well, how is that happening? Why are people saying it's very important that laws need to be strengthened, and yet people are saying, about 1/4 of people said, actually, the word equality is meaningless to me. Now, more said it was meaningful. And we got into the idea of, well, is it a word that's the problem, or is it what equality does is the issue? So we said, do you think that public figures, public leaders, now this isn't just politicians, it's those of us that have a public and civic leadership role, do we show leadership in equality? Only 1 in 5 said that we did. And that's a very strong message. In fact, 53% disagreed with this. That was the most negative, the highest score for a negative comment in the whole of the survey.
Would most people not be thinking, however, about politicians?
Yep. Well, that may be the case, but remember, this was in February, so this was before the last two sets of elections, and I accept what you say, but we've had 2.5 years where politicians haven't been taking decisions, and the people who actually are in the public square taking positions on programmes, as well as politicians, are other public leaders. And that includes the people who lead the 130 or 40 public bodies. It includes, you know, civic leaders, church leaders, all of us who the public look to for leadership in the public square. Now, I'm equally as culpable as that. This isn't me casting aspersions at other people. So those of us, if you like, in the last couple of years, the public say generally, over half, you have not shown sufficient leadership in equality. And they demonstrated in this poll, equality is vital. We're a body, Frank, born out of the Belfast Good Friday Agreement. And when it was signed, one of the core principles that people signed up to was the right to equal opportunity and social and economic activity, regardless of caste, creed, disability, gender, or ethnicity. And they specifically mentioned the role of women. And I think the problem here is that when we use the word equality, it can be used politically, socially, economically, as almost a word that means whatever I want it to mean. And it becomes a zero sum. So if I get something, you have to get something. And I hear people say, that's not fair, or that's a thing for the Equality Commission. And I have to say, you know, just because something's unfair, number one, doesn't mean there's equality protections under the law. And number two, doesn't actually mean that it is, in fact, unequal. So, for example, I'm over 60, I have free eyesight test. It's not fair for under 60s, but it's perfectly lawful. So I want to move the conversation to the impact of equality. I would prefer that people start talking about, we want it, but what would it look like if there was an outbreak of equality, for example, in socially disadvantaged backgrounds? We know that if you're a Protestant working class boy, or indeed a Catholic working class boy, and you look at the scores on the doors for GCSEs and A-levels, that they are much less well served by the education system. That is, for us, a key enduring part of our inequalities that we're trying to present. Now, the more we talk about equality as this big concept up there that means different things to different people, and the more we get down to saying, how could your community benefit from equality being lived experience in your communities? I don't think we would have the same disagreements.
It's interesting that you say there about the education system and a Protestant working class boy you used as an example is less well served by the education system, making it sound like as if it's the fault of the education system, where it could be the fault of that Protestant working class boy's parents or guardians who never encourage him to do a hands turn at school.
Well, those things for me are inextricably linked. We have a system at the minute, and we divide about 250,000 children 7 ways. And those include, we have mixed schools or co-ed schools, we have single-sex schools, we have state schools, we have Catholic schools, integrated schools, grammars. And, you know, if I were going to start from somewhere, it wouldn't be from here, but we are where we are. Now, in that system, this system, and that includes those of us that support it, that's the teachers, the pupils, and the educational establishments, and parents who buy into that system, because that's the only one we have. That system is actually, in my view certainly, failing those children that I've described to you. And this is actually about socioeconomic disadvantage, because the one thing that ties inequality together in this place I call home is poverty and socio disadvantage. And yet, it's not a protected characteristic under equality law. So, even though we know that if you're living in an area that's more socioeconomically disadvantaged, you're less likely to have good life chances in school or in work, and certainly access to health services. You're more likely to end up in the criminal justice system, for example. We know this. I mean, it's not the Equality Commission saying this. Our reach into this is to say, let's move the conversation to talking about what would a more fair society, a more equal society, look like? In other words, the outcomes, the real changes it would deliver for people. And that might mean, Frank, you getting 2 and me getting 1 of the bit of equality. Now, that doesn't sound fair, but we already do it for people with disabilities. We make reasonable adjustments for those people, and no one is screaming about it. So I think unless we have this really detailed discussion about what we're saying in this poll, everybody wants more equality of opportunity.
And do you
think
that's
agreed?
Yeah, do you think that progress can be made on what seem like hidden inequalities at the moment compared to the overt inequalities that we had in the past. I had a conversation a few weeks ago with a man who is about 7 or 8 years older than me, and he was getting involved in, it was in, I'm not going to say exactly where, but it was in broadcasting stroke the media in the 1970s. And he applied for a job, and he had a Catholic-sounding name. And this is a Presbyterian who had a Catholic-sounding name. And he told me, he said, I was trying to get into the Electricians Union, and I was blocked because I was a Catholic. And when I explained, I have a Catholic-sounding name, I'm not a Catholic, I then got into the union. This particular group of union workers was going to block him because he was a Catholic in the 1970s in a particular organisation. Now, the progress that has been made on that is absolutely obvious. Also, when I started out in the media, quite commonly, women who were involved in logging output on television, I'm just using a very mild example, were called officially loggy birds. That's what they were called, loggy birds. They weren't referred to as secretaries. They weren't referred to as members of staff. They weren't referred to as colleagues. They're just, the loggy bird will do that for you. Now, if you called someone a loggy bird in the workplace today, in any workplace, that you could end up with a court case against you, and quite understandably. Those are two perfect examples of how obvious progress has been made with regards to equality, one in religion, one in terms of gender. Many, many other examples could be ticked off. Can you see progress being made where the inequality, or rather, the inequality seems to be more hidden in the future? Because you seem to have addressed most of the obvious stuff.
Well, look, there's an issue, for example. You take disability. In my 8 years here, we have seen a huge increase in the number of people who come to us with thinking they've been discriminated against. We're now over 4,000 every year. And each year, incrementally, the number of people presenting with issues around disability increases. Now, our recent survey said, we think most disabled employees are supported well in the workplace, 54%. And I believe it's another one of those things that you've been saying. Employers are now know what this is about. But, and this accords with our own view, mental ill health, the hidden, if you want to describe it that way, disability in this case, less than a third said that they felt workplaces supported it. Now, there's a hidden inequality in the sense that we know it's there. We're trying to get at it. It's not reported very much. But how we've actually addressed that is that we, together with a number of other organisations, have actually helped to create a thing called the Mental Health Charter. And this is trying to, if I could use the word, out this in the workplace. It's looking at bullying. It's looking at men. It's looking at talking about mental health the way we would about a broken leg. The head of the civil service has signed up for the entire civil service to this. We've now 100 employing bodies signed up to it. We have organisations promoting this, appointing champions in the workplace. So here's one way that we know there's an underreporting. We know that people with intellectual disabilities are treated less well. In other words, they're just treated the same as everybody else. But, you know, there's no use. I have a friend who had, for example, a reading problem. It probably was dyslexia. And he said when he went in for an exam, he was given an extra half hour to do the exam. He said all that gave him was an extra half hour not to be able to read. Now, I know that sounds slightly humorous, but that was somebody's attempt to try to do something for someone with an intellectual disability, but didn't consult the person themselves. So we have made huge benefits, Frank, but they're hidden. What about the newcomers that are coming in? Even this survey said that travellers in Roma and newcomer children are coming out with fewer qualifications than their counterparts. We know this to be true, and we've had the travellers among us for a long time. We know that the attendance rates are high. We know that their performance at school is less than we would expect, and we've been working with others for 40 years to try to better that. This is a slow drip process. But I, with you, say we have made huge, for example, the three women who were appointed recently, for me, the fact they're women isn't a story anymore. Now, I understand why in some circles they're talking about it, but for me, that actually should be normative, the best person for the job. If I'd been talking to you 40 years ago, even 20 years ago, and looked at the civil service, at the top civil servants, we've now got three permanent secretaries who are female. That, and that's not a discussion. Look at the party leaders. We now accept this as normative. I don't think it would come about without law, because law actually challenges people in the workplace or in public spaces, but it rarely changes attitudes. It helps because people show that diversity works. So this that I want to have the conversation is around hearts and minds. Law may be part of the architecture, but I don't want people to do things simply because the law requires them to. I want them to do things because it's a darn good thing to do, and they believe we all benefit from the equality for the other. And if we ask that question, what can I do for you, as our foundational question when we enter into discussions, how can I help you have equality of opportunity? And that was reciprocated. I think we wouldn't be where we are.
But it is part of a journey, isn't it? You mentioned the travelling community, just very briefly, because we've come to the end of this, but you mentioned the travelling community. And not very long ago, if a young traveller had educated him or herself to become, I'm simply going to use the profession that I'm most linked to. I'm just going to use the example of a journalist. If a young traveller became a journalist 20 years ago, the young traveller may have had all the qualities of being a very good journalist. The chances of that traveller getting a job were practically nil. If a young traveller today educated him or herself to become a journalist, I have no doubt in my mind broadcasting organisations on the island of Ireland and across the United Kingdom would knock each other down to be the first person to put a traveller on television, on the radio, or indeed as a major conduit or link from one programme to the other in any form of the media. They'd want to be seen to do that. Are they doing it for the right reasons?
Well, you know, I would be talking to friends who live with particular disabilities, and they're saying, I would rather people did it because they think it's the right thing to do rather than having tokenism. If you look at the whole movement for promotion of women, we've had that debate over 40 years about tokenism, you know, appointing a woman because she's a woman rather than because she has the skills. And it would be the same for a traveller. It could be the optics. I'm sure maybe that happens. But in most cases, it's because they're the right person for the job. Well, let me give you a very simple example. You talked about hidden things. We do a lot of work with travellers, and we had consultations with travellers, about 60 of them in a room a few weeks ago. And during that consultation, I heard a couple of things that really made me stop in my tracks. Despite legislation, a number of traveller families said to me, when they make bookings at hotels for maybe a wedding or a baptism or a confirmation, they never they rarely disclose the fact they're from a travelling community. And the most powerful thing for me was a young woman who actually said that when she went for jobs, and this was another person who was a male said the same thing, is they actually hide the fact when they're asked for their address often that they're coming from a travelling background. And when I actually said, really? They said, yeah. Because first and foremost, we feel, now this mightn't be the case, but our perception is we will be discriminated against because we're from the travelling community. Now, there are two things to this. One is we've got to instill and help the travelling community to say law's on their side, people are on their side, and people want to work together to make this a more equal society. So there is a mindset in there, absolutely. But also for us, you know, there are onlookers, people who watch this and don't comment, and we're trying to say there isn't the room for an onlooker. You know, the guilt of the onlooker is something we've suffered from in this place I call home for so many years. We've all got to get involved in this because we all have a stake in the future. And for me, anyway, this is a very positive survey. It says we should have this discussion around what equality does rather than what the word means. But more importantly, we've got community background here right across all communities and backgrounds and sectors to say equality is what we want and we want to be involved in it, and leaders should be given a much stronger leadership in it.
Okay. Dr. Michael Wardlow, a very comprehensive analysis of this particular survey that has been carried out. Thank you for the Chief Commissioner of the Equality Commission.